Welcome back to Connecting Faith and our leadership special. I had a chance to sit down with author, orator, and artist Eric Samuel Tim. Eric Samuel Tim uses the power of art to help potential leaders become visionaries. Here's what he had to say about creating vision.
One of the things that you write on your website, which I was most interested in, is you say life was not meant to be lived on the mountaintop, that life is found in the valley. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean simply that I think all of us experience life on a sort of a sawtooth reality. From a biblical perspective, you read Psalm 22 and you read Psalm 23. They're very different in nature. David is the same guy who writes these, inspired by the Holy Spirit, Psalm 22, Psalm 23. And so you see this paradigm of valleys and mountaintops, of, you know, sunshine and shadows. And I don't think real life is really Disney World with your kids. Nobody lives there. I mean, look at a mountain on the side of a hill above 8,000 meters or so. There's that death zone where you can't even, your body stops assimilating oxygen. Trees don't grow a certain level. Nothing grows on a mountaintop. I mean, you meet someone and they go on this great family vacation, or they have this great moment in their life or their untold success. They grow some, but you meet someone who walked through a really hard season where a vacation would have been a breath of fresh air, or you meet someone who had survived cancer. They grew a lot. Hmm. I mean, I can tell you more people would say the hardest parts of my life have shaped me the most than the most joyous parts of my life.
And yet we seem to be encouraging people to get to that mountaintop experience. And do you think that once people get to that point, then they realize that they really have much more to learn?
I think they have a lot to learn in either location or season. I think what I would wish that people would understand is when you are in those mountaintops, you will grow, but mostly out of touch. And you will die there, and you will die again for the valley. You'll grow so much where you'll lose touch on reality of what, like, some people really are walking through. And then at the same time, you get there and you live there and you just want to go to the valley again, to where it feels real. I mean, you look at, like, someone like, U2, the band. They're the biggest rock band ever, okay? Arguably. And they're in Africa working because they're dying for the valley. They get to the mountain and they just realize there's something more. And I think that's a cycle that we all can experience, but I think people at the summit just maybe need to be aware of. So I guess what I mean by life was not meant to be lived on the mountaintop, I think life on that mountaintop prepares us to work in the valley. Hmm. I think the mountaintop moments give us our valley mission, if that makes sense.
So you're going through a little experience yourself in trying to get a degree, going back to school. How is your faith kind of shaping that experience, or how is your faith being shaped by that experience?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a great question. Going back to school with three kids, a 7, 4, and a 2-year-old, to, you know, complete your Master's of Divinity, which, from Northwestern, by the way, it's a challenge. But at the same time, I think that it's a worthy mission. It's shaping me intellectually, that's for sure, stretching me in places that I just had never really considered. It's like if you feed your body fast food continually, you feel those effects. You can survive, but, you know, it's not going to give you the sustenance. It's not going to stretch you like a different diet would. I think a lot of times when we look at our intellectual, I guess, section of our life, we're taking in so much fast food. And I think what this pursuit of this degree has done for me is it's really put some meat and potatoes in front of me, and it's made me have a complete different diet. Hmm. Intellectually. Spiritually, I think where it stretches me the most is just reliance on my unreadiness, my glaringly obvious desire for Sabbath. You start throwing so many irons in the fire, and, you know, to operate out of the fruit of the Spirit versus how you want to operate, you know, that comes to a head under pressure, you know, and pursuing a degree puts pressure And character is revealed in pressure. It's not really shaped. I mean, in my life anyway. I think it, when you're in pressure, who you are comes out. And so I think that's where it's really been glaringly obvious in my relationship with, you know, my kids and my ministry and the people I serve and, you know, from a spiritual perspective.
How do you find the Sabbath when you have three kids and you're pursuing a master's degree and you work?
You got to be faithful to the rest and faithful to work. I think balance is a myth. I think people use that word where they are going to stack up enough bricks on one side of their life and another enough bricks on the other, and the weight measures will balance each other out, and we'll look back and say, my life is balanced. Life is not balanced. It never is. Tragedy strikes. Circumstances happen. Unforeseen, incontrollable circumstances arise. We don't have balance. In fact, we don't even have control either. This is a whole other whole question, but I think you got to be faithful to work and you have to be faithful to rest. And what I mean by that is it's more of a question of, are you being faithful to the work when you're working, when you're in that mode? Are you really there? And then when you're in rest, are you really faithful to the rest? And I think a lot of people blur that, where they're taking their day off with their computer and that book they got to read for that class.
Or they're working on their phone when they're spending time with their kids.
Yeah, and then their son or daughter has to say four or five times to snap them into the room because they're geographically present but mentally absent. So they're being unfaithful to the rest. And to be faithful to work and faithful to the rest, I think, is exactly how you balance, quote unquote,
right,
that, if that makes sense.
So tell me a little bit about what you do, what you're going to do here at Fuel, but what you do with your art and the message of the gospel.
Well, I think art is a very powerful vehicle. I think art can allow people to see what they could never hear. I think art, Joe, allows people to access emotions and feelings that maybe they would be afraid to otherwise access. In the gospel, the message of Christ is always put into a vehicle, into a story, into a parable, into some sort of reality that we are able to understand it. And art can really be a powerful vehicle to convey those messages. So for me, I think it's a collision of the truth of the word and the beauty of art, and being able to bring those concepts from the life of Christ alive in modern day metaphor, ways that the average person, I would say, just in my own, I guess, giftings, you know, to use a Christian term here, evangelistically, I look at it through that lens, typically, where I'm always asking, does this have an attraction to someone who's disconnected from the reality of who Jesus is? Not the historical, but the saving work. And does this have a deeper level of understanding to someone who is connected to Christ? And I think art can do that. I think art can be something where someone wants to ask a question, and I think art can answer a question at the same time.
What is your favorite truth to communicate when you're presenting your art and the message of Christ?
That's a hard question. Can we skip that? No, I'm kidding.
We can skip it.
I don't want to skip it. I'm kidding. I think death to life. I would say that concept or that reality, for people that are doing great and they're okay and life is fine, there's still an element where I think at some point they're looking for life. Hmm. Like they're a human doing versus a human being. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Like the sacrificial, I am nothing.
Like the redemption piece. I think that's huge. I love conveying that to people that are looking for that reset, that restart, you know, to borrow a friend's phrase. A guy named Nick, beautiful calling on his life and what God has allowed Paul to do. And but, you know, I think that idea of Jesus is an important narrative for this generation.
Hmm. Do you, I was intrigued by something on your website that you'd written a book called Static Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
The Art of Hearing God Through the Noise. And since I have Star Wars fans, I know, as children, and a husband, I know what a Jedi is. So
are you a Star Wars fan?
Sure, I'm a Star Wars fan, too.
So you don't have to cloak that.
I grew up in the 80s,
okay,
and
good.
So, yes. So I'm intrigued. Why that metaphor?
Good.
And why
question.
Do we need to do that, to hear God through the noise?
I think it's important for anyone that is living today in a busy, loud landscape to be able to not walk blindly, but to have that light unto their path, that still small voice that I believe that they can hear. And static is noise. Jedi is a form of mastery, to borrow what you're speaking of in metaphor. But through the book, I give five keys from the life of Christ that help us to, yes, master the static, become a Jedi of the static, or a master, a form of mastery of the static, to borrow that sort of term. Okay. But really what I'm saying, and I flip this on its head in the end, and this is sort of a spoiler alert, I guess. If somebody is listening to this and they want to not know how I flip it, then you might want to turn off your radio. But static is also equilibrium or balance, like stillness. It's static. And Jedi, interestingly enough, actually comes from a short form of the word Jedediah, which is a Hebrew boy's name, which actually means beloved. So it's, two paradigms that are existing. Journey to master the noise, but just know in Christ it's a get to, not a have to. You're already beloved by God at rest. And that's really the message. It's a call for anybody who woke up this morning and before they invested time pursuing Jesus through the Word or in prayer, and you checked your Facebook or your Instagram, or you're listening to this radio station before you did that, then you need to read this book. Because you live out of order, like I did, and we wonder why we have no order. We want God to say something, but yet we're just not in a place where we're listening.
To find out more about Eric Samuel Tim, you can head to our website at myfaithradio.com. Up next, Eugene Cho on the importance of leaders learning to listen well. We'll be right back.